This message comes from Wall Street Journal sponsor C3 AI. C3 Generative AI equips enterprises with verified, traceable answers. It's secure, hallucination-free, LLM agnostic, and IP liability-free. Learn more at c3.ai. This is Enterprise AI.
Russian missiles hit Odessa, Ukraine says. Plus, after a brutal 6 months for markets, what's next?
We typically have seen a really big comeback in the stock market when we've had first half that's been this bad. But at the moment, it doesn't really seem like a lot of investors are very confident about the snapback happening.
And the EU proposes legislation to target foreign subsidies. It's Friday, July 1st. I'm Luke Vargas with the Wall Street Journal. Here's the AM edition of What's News, the top headlines and business stories moving your world today. Russian missile strikes overnight on a neighborhood in the southern Ukrainian region of Odessa killed at least 18 people, according to Ukrainian officials. Last night's attacks in Odessa occurred just hours after the conclusion of a North Atlantic Treaty Organization summit, where U.S. President Joe Biden promised to support Ukraine, quote, for as long as it takes. The attack is the latest in a surge of Russian strikes and follows an attack on a shopping mall in central Ukraine that killed at least 20 people and a barrage of missiles that hit the capital of Kyiv after weeks of relative calm there. Chinese President Xi Jinping marked the 25th anniversary of Hong Kong's handover from Britain today, saying that the city's loyalty to Beijing will ensure its future prosperity. Political power must be grasped by the hands of patriots, Xi said, defending his government's efforts to weed out dissenting voices from Hong Kong politics over the past 2 years. Beijing had promised the former British colony 5 decades of self-governance, as well as a path to universal suffrage under Chinese rule, but many of the political freedoms the city enjoyed through that arrangement have been eviscerated. European Union lawmakers have reached a provisional political agreement on new rules for companies that reap financial benefits from governments outside the bloc. The regulation targets foreign subsidies and aims primarily at companies from China, though it has sparked concern from some U.S. business groups that American companies could be affected. WSJ reporter Kim McCrail has more.
Once the rules start applying, which will probably be sometime next year, regulators will have the power to block companies from making certain acquisitions or winning large public contracts if they think those companies benefited from subsidies that distorted the market. Some business groups in Europe said they're glad the EU is doing something about foreign subsidies. They believe heavily subsidized companies have harmed European interests. But there's also concern about the administrative burden the new rules will bring.
A labor contract covering U.S. seaports from Washington State to California is set to expire today, sending talks between West Coast dock workers, cargo handling companies, and container shipping lines into a new and high-stakes phase. Both sides remain far apart on issues including pay and automation, that is, raising fears over the potential for disruptions at major American ports, including the nation's busiest container port complex at Los Angeles and Long Beach. And the U.S. Federal Communications Commission has given permission for Elon Musk's SpaceX to connect a range of vehicles to its satellite internet service Starlink. The decision, which covers everything from airplanes and boats to RVs, is a win for SpaceX as it seeks to broaden its customer base. The FCC said the order will expand the range of broadband capabilities to meet the growing user demands that now require connectivity while on the move. A spokesman for SpaceX didn't immediately respond to a request for comment. Just a few months ago, a number of countries faced a wheat crisis as they raced to fill a gap in food supplies triggered by Russia's invasion of Ukraine. But now there are some signs emerging that the crisis could be abating, even if Ukraine's ability to export its crop is far from back to normal. WSJ commodities reporter Yusuf Khan joins us now for a repeat appearance this week from London with the details. Hi, Yusuf.
Hey, how's it going?
Doing great. What factors are driving a tempering, as you describe it, of the global wheat crisis?
So really what we're seeing is we're getting much better weather in Europe and in the US. It's allowing for speedier harvests from farmers, especially in Europe. and better planting in terms of crops in the US. The USDA upped its yield and it upped its wheat production forecast by 8 million bushels earlier this month. And crop progress was doing a lot better than expected. So those are two of the factors. But also we're seeing a lot of shipments from Russia, which is the world's biggest wheat producer. Their shipments haven't really seemed to have subsided through the war. And although there's been a lot of different changes in the ways commodities work and the way trade works, that wheat is still finding its way out of the country.
And how is that affecting prices? Because one component of the food crisis that we described a few months ago wasn't just a shortage of wheat, but that soaring prices would be too expensive to allow countries to actually purchase supplies.
Well, really, that's the main thing. It's rather than a food crisis per se, it's a food price crisis. And what we are seeing is prices subside a little. It was nearly $13 a bushel in Chicago, which was, from memory, a record high in March. And now it's come down to sort of $9 a bushel. I have to caveat that and say, though, that is still quite a high price for a good like wheat. Usually it sits around $5 or $6, especially sort of pre-pandemic. And there's still going to be problems in terms of access for poorer countries, especially in sort of the Middle East, North Africa, those sort of places that are heavily reliant on wheat and bread for the calories. Prices are still very high. And while experts aren't really saying there's going to be conflict from this, there are a lot of people that are at risk in terms of hunger and possibly in terms of famine if prices do stay high.
That was Wall Street Journal commodities reporter Yusuf Khan. Yusuf, thank you.
No worries. Cheers.
Coming up, we'll look back on the brutal first half of the year for markets and consider what the next 6 months could hold. That's after the break.
This message comes from Wall Street Journal sponsor C3 AI. Insights. You need them to solve business problems, but buried in volumes of disparate data, they're seemingly invisible. C3 Generative AI enables business leaders to instantly access secure, hallucination-free, verifiable insights from a unified knowledge source, all with a natural language search. Turn the invisible into the obvious with C3 Generative AI. Learn more at c3.ai.
Global markets have closed out the most bruising first half of a year in decades, with the S&P 500 falling 21% through Thursday. According to Dow Jones Market data, that is the worst first half of a year since 1970. There is bad news pretty much wherever you look. Investment-grade bonds posted their worst start to a year in history, according to the iShares Core U.S. Aggregate Bond ETF. Cryptocurrencies also came crashing down. So could the second half of the year, starting today, be any better? WSJ Markets reporter Akane Otani joins us now to consider that and other questions. Hi, Akane. How are you?
Good. Thank you for having me.
Before we look to the future, has there been any corner of the market that sort of dodged the bullet over the last 6 months?
Pretty much only commodities prices, and specifically there, we're looking at oil prices and gasoline prices. Oil prices, of course, started really surging after Russia invaded Ukraine. Russia is the world's third largest oil producer, so that really disrupted the energy market. And as a result, we were seeing things like gasoline prices in the US actually hit records. But a lot of the other commodities, copper, for instance, gold, they were actually not doing as well this year. So it really has been sort of a story about specifically oil and gasoline prices in the first half.
And what are you hearing in terms of investor sentiment regarding what might come next?
There's a lot of anxiety, and that's because investors are very cognizant of the fact that central banks around the world, not just in the US, but in Europe and Asia, they're all set on continuing to raise interest rates to try to contain inflation, which has been very, very high. And that is naturally expected to slow down economic growth. The question is how much slowdown are we going to see? Is that actually going to push us into recession? Because of course, that's not historically been very good for risky assets like stocks. Corporate earnings will fall. That makes investors generally less enthusiastic about putting money into things like stocks. So there's a lot of anxiety about how aggressive central banks are going to have to be in the second half and how much of a slowdown we can expect to see as a result of that.
Akane, how does that investor anxiety line up with what history tells us about how markets typically perform after a bad start to the year?
Yeah, well, interestingly enough, we typically have seen a really big comeback in the stock market when we've had first half that's been this bad. So when the S&P has fallen at least 15% in the first half of the year, it's risen an average of 24% in the second half. So you tend to see a very big comeback. And one reason for that is eventually sometimes investors sort of think, okay, things have fallen too far. People are too pessimistic. Maybe it's time to sort of step in and buy stocks at discounted prices. But I do think it's worth mentioning that at the moment, people are so pessimistic that it doesn't really seem like a lot of investors are very confident about this snapback happening at the moment.
Right. So you don't see signs that the bottom has been found yet.
No, when you look at things like the VIX, for instance, the volatility index that people tend to call the Wall Street's fear gauge, that, for instance, hasn't climbed as high as it has at the peak of other market crashes. And then in terms of just what investors are looking for to get back into the market, I think a lot of folks say they're looking for a soft landing. They're looking for evidence that the Fed can pull off raising interest rates and containing inflation, but not actually triggering a recession. And the bad news on that front is that the Fed has historically not been very good at actually pulling that off. In fact, if you go back to the 1980s, four of the last six times that the Fed has kicked off interest rate increase campaigns, we've seen a recession. So that's a big reason why investors are kind of pessimistic right now, even though historically the data shows that, you know, second half can be quite good for the market, is because they're realizing this is a very, very difficult task that central banks are facing.
Though we should say not everybody shares this gloomy view. In your reporting, you cite a Bank of America survey of investors in June that paints a little bit of a different picture.
Yeah, Bank of America tracks things like how much cash fund managers have in their portfolios, how much stocks do they have in their portfolios relative to long-term patterns. And they've found that, you know, at the moment, a lot of investors have more cash than average. Makes sense because they're a little bit nervous about the market. Fewer stocks than average. Again, that sort of goes with this theme of nervousness. And then they're extremely pessimistic about the economy. I mean, levels of pessimism that traditionally we've only seen during actual recessions. And so Bank of America actually sort of takes a contrarian perspective and they say these factors actually make markets look painfully oversold. So maybe if you're sort of a bold investor, you tend to try to take the contrarian perspective. It's actually a good time to step in and sort of buy the dip. Again, I think there is a lot of pessimism when you talk to investors generally, and it seems like nobody wants to be the first to take that step just because of how volatile things have been. But yeah, it is interesting to note just how stretched some positions have gotten.
And what kind of position are these sort of bold investors taking now?
Yeah, one investor I talked to was saying they have actually added several stocks to their portfolios in the last couple of quarters because the sell-off has been so brutal. But that being said, she was very specific that she's looking at individual companies and sort of analyzing their specific merits, their ability to withstand inflation and slowing growth. So it definitely seems like the investors who are seeing buying opportunities are being quite selective these days.
That was Wall Street Journal markets reporter Akane Otani. Akane, thank you for the update.
Thanks for having me.
And finally, as Americans gather to commemorate the 4th of July on Monday, one fixture of the night sky could be missing from a number of celebrations: fireworks. To blame is a shortage of both fireworks and workers that's forced some cities and towns to scrap their fireworks shows altogether, and others to reschedule their Independence Day pyrotechnics to as far back as Labor Day. WSJ Speed and Trending reporter Lauren Azu has more.
Some cities, the fireworks vendors they are working with, they don't have enough laborers to actually work the day of the 4th, and so they're suggesting alternate dates because there's just not enough hands to go around. And also the other side of it is the fireworks industry was heavily affected by supply chain issues, and most fireworks in the U.S. come from China, and so there's only so many shipping containers, there's so many boats that carry explosives like fireworks, and then there's only so many trucks that can transport fireworks, because actually to drive fireworks you need a commercial driver's license with a hazmat certification.
And that's What's News for Friday morning. We'll be back tonight with a new show. I'm Luke Vargas with the Wall Street Journal, and fireworks or not, have a great weekend, and thanks for listening.
This message comes from Wall Street Journal sponsor C3 AI. C3 Generative AI equips enterprises with verified, traceable answers. It's secure, hallucination-free, LLM agnostic, and IP liability-free. Learn more at c3.ai. This is Enterprise AI.